Hello, everyone, and welcome once more to Quick Question, the only hour-long podcast with two guys. Period. That's it. It's a neat little fact from our research department. Doesn't sound right, but the Whiz Kids know their stuff. I'm one half of that podcast, American Dad writer, American Dad beer, and thanks to a recently aired episode, American Dad performer. I'm also the guy from your Spanish 101 class, freshman year of college, who was so excited to make new friends, he came out guns blazing with jokes the first day of class, causing the teacher to dub him, for the rest of the semester, white noise. Or in Spanish, ruido blanco, which is just somehow way more devastating. I'm joined, as always, by my co-host, Daniel O'Brien. Say hi, Daniel.
Hello, my name is Daniel O'Brien. I am an Emmy award-winning writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver and a book writer about presidents mostly, and person who was so not concerned with being your friend when he took middle school Italian that his greatest pleasure was when the Italian teacher introduced him to a different Italian teacher and said, look how good he is at the alphabet, securing my fate as someone who was not going to be a sexual icon for a very long time, Daniel O'Brien. Thanks again for having me, Soren.
And you may hear another voice as well. We are still continuing our new thing where we've got another guest on the show today. And Dan, I'm not going to introduce you to our guest this time because I feel like I already did that 4 years ago when I told you need to listen to Reply All.
Absolutely. I would say the only podcast that should exist. There's no other good podcast, including this one.
It's true.
But Reply All is the only podcast that should have been made and should continue to be made.
The first time I heard it was an episode called Cathedral, and it was this crossover that Radiolab had done to get people interested in Reply All, and it worked hard for me. If you're somehow not familiar with the show, I encourage you to, you know what, just turn off this one and go listen to 158, The Case of the Missing Hit, or episode 56, Zardulu, or episode 86, Man of the People. There's also a three-part series called On the Inside that's very good. It's some of the best hard journalism mixed with incredible storytelling you'll find anywhere, and I'm going to say anywhere. I'm thrilled that we're joined by one half of Reply All, Alex Goldman.
Hi, guys. Thanks for having me. I'd just like to say that I was the guy in my junior high school French class that got sent to detention for changing the name Dennis on the board to the word penis. So
classic.
Yeah, I know. I'm really still, honestly, I feel like that was sort of a high point for me.
Here's a question that, like, I have no like journalism background, but this is a thing that I've thought for a very long time. Alex, are you so? The fact that there was French taught in your school, did you come from a town that had a lot of money?
Yeah, I did. I mean, not a super rich town, but I came from Ann Arbor, Michigan. So, you know, college town. I mean, there definitely was like, there was like a wrong side of the tracks where the kids whose parents weren't professors lived. My dad wasn't a professor, but he was a judge, so I did live on the side with the professors.
Okay, just a simple, humble judge.
Just a salt-of-the-earth judge out there every day hoeing the fields of justice.
Yeah, so we only had Italian and Spanish in all of our schools growing up, and I took that to mean that, like, when I was much younger, a childish idea of like, oh, we don't have enough money for French or Latin. Like, we can't afford a third language. But then as I got older, I thought like, oh, there might be something to that. We might just be like a town that cannot afford teachers.
Now I realize like how incredibly spoiled we were because we had French, Spanish, German, and Latin.
German, wow. Goodness gracious.
Yeah. They went far enough. They jumped out of the romance languages and went right to the hard stuff.
Gosh, we had Spanish. That was kind of it.
Well, Soren grew up in like a log cabin in the woods.
How old are you guys though?
38.
34.
Oh, I was going to say that like maybe I'm old enough that this was that I grew up in a time when there was still money in the school system.
Yeah.
But no, I'm 40, so 41. So we're relatively the same.
So it was a time when the upper class went to school and then the other kids became chimney sweeps.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thanks to Postmates for supporting Quick Question. If you're like me, I'm sorry. But also, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I love food. That's why I love using Postmates. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use the code QQ.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, Alex. We've been wanting to do this for a long time, and I'm very excited to have you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
There are some questions that we want to ask you. Generally in this show, the way it works is that we'll ask a quick question and everybody can answer. Although in this case, I've got some that are very specific to you and I'm not confident Dan would have an answer to them.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Oh yeah, I'm so ready. I'm yeah. really excited.
I want you okay. to know that like the premise of this show is it's just gotcha questions. We're trying to get someone canceled every single week.
Yeah.
And this week you're in the hot seat.
All right. challenge accepted.
Question number one. I was wondering if you could just give us like an oral history of the creation of Mayor Wheat.
Oh, okay. I mean, do I have to explain what Mayor Wheat is?
Okay. Mayor Wheat was for a good portion of, I want to say the middle of last year. Alex Goldman started pioneered, I would say, a movement online where everyone's accounts on Twitter just said Mayor Wheat for a while.
I wish that I could say that I pioneered it. So I have a friend named David Grossman. He's a journalist. And David Grossman tweeted one day an off-brand Mayor Pete whose name is Mayor Wheat. And I thought the idea, like, this was at the time when, you know, there were still like 18 candidates in the Democratic primary. And like, Mayor Pete already to me was pretty off-brand. So the idea of like an off-brand Mayor Pete struck me as so unbelievably hilarious that I just like tweeted it, but the response to the phrase Mayor Wheat was like such bafflement that I was like, huh, Mayor Wheat like really is a thing that that like people are compelled by for some reason. And then there were just all these sort of delightful coincidences that kept it going. Like, there actually is a Mayor Wheat somewhere in Texas. It's a woman. I can't remember what her name is. Hold on just a second.
Wheat.
Mayor Wheat, Texas.
Sounds like Mayor Wheat, yeah.
I will say, and I know that Google autofill is different for everybody, but when you Google search Mayor Wheat, it says Mayor Wheat Alex Goldman. Mayor Laura Wheat of Westlake, Texas. There was that. So and you... then there was like, you know, Pete Buttigieg worked for a consulting company that was fixing bread prices in Canada. So all of a sudden it was like, oh, Mayor Wheat is a thing that is well outside of my purview. But the thing that I find most delightful about it, honestly, is my tweets delete every 2 weeks. Because in the spirit of not getting canceled, I'm like, anything older than 2 weeks, I probably said something unbelievably problematic. So I'm going to go ahead and like set them to auto-delete.
That's smart.
But now I just deny that it ever happened. No one can prove it.
So from
but
the
outside, I tweeted the phrase Mayor Wheat. Like I tweeted just the phrase Mayor Wheat once a day for like 6 months.
And it really took off. It took off like wildfire.
It really took off.
And let me just tell you, Alex, from the outside, it was the most bizarre thing because as someone on Twitter, I just see Mayor Wheat suddenly, and all these people I know are just tweeting Mayor Wheat. And I missed the boat on it, and I was like, what is going on? And I feel like there were a lot of people who missed the boat the very first time you tweeted it, and they were just like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to go with it. And they all started doing Mayor Wheat. And then this like revolution took place.
Yeah, I feel like I'm in the same place as Soren, where I just woke up one day and saw Mayor Wheat, and I was like, what the fuck? I thought I could sleep in. What happened? What are you all talking about?
What I found was people would ask me what it was, and if I responded Mayor Wheat, they would just respond Mayor Wheat back. And then suddenly it was like immediately they were in the fold. It was really exciting.
Is that, can I ask, so you Google Mayor Wheat and you see Mayor Wheat, Alex Goldman. Are there other things that bring up your name that are surprising to you?
I don't know. Let me Google Alex Goldman and see what happens.
Oh, that'll be fun.
Alex Goldman age, Alex Goldman wife. So not surprising, but right. A little unsettling.
Oh yeah, there's a lot of age ones. There's Alex Goldman reply all age. Yeah. There's Alex Goldman birthday.
That's really so weird. Someone sent me an email the other day, which was like, "I have to know how old you are. What? How old are you?" And I was like, "What? I don't care." And she was like, "I was arguing with my boyfriend about it." And I was like, "Why would you? What possible reason? Like, what? What satisfaction is the answer going to give you?"
Yeah, sounds like an answer won't solve this relationship's problems.
Yeah, seriously, they're much bigger than my age.
Now, Alex, you. I will ask about Mayor Wheat because you have sort of like this appetite for letting mysteries remain mysteries. You did Zardulu. You did an episode of Reply All that was all about the subway rat, or pizza rat, I guess.
Pizza rat,
called.
You fucking Colorado hack. Come on.
Yeah, about pizza rat and the origin of pizza rat. You also, Breakmaster Cylinder, does the music for your show. Famously an elusive human being that no one can possibly get in contact with, maybe doesn't exist. It's all up in the air. Now, I need to know for my own edification, did you want to be a magician when you were a little kid?
No, I wanted to be a basketball player.
What?
Yeah, I wanted to be a basketball player, but then I realized, like, oh, I hate exercise. And my dad is like 5'4", so I don't think it's in the cards for me. No, I didn't want to be a magician, but the idea that like there can be mystery in the world is really exciting to me. And you know, Breakmaster Cylinder, really early on, I said, you know, I want you to get credit for the work that you do. Do you want me to give you credit? And they were just like, nah, Breakmaster Cylinder's fine.
But were you an indoor kid growing up? Like separate from you don't need to be an aspiring magician, but like were you like when you say you wanted to be a basketball player, were you a jock?
No. I wanted the wealth and prestige of being a basketball player.
Yeah.
I did not want to actually put the work in. I very quickly adjusted to wanting to be a rock star, which felt a little more achievable, but then again, like also didn't really want to put in the work.
Yeah. I do agree that is a more indoor pursuit than wanting to be a professional basketball player. That is somewhere between pro basketball player and magician. In between there is keyboardist.
Okay, yeah. Definitely.
Who was your guy then? When you were a kid and you had posters of basketball players on your wall, who was your guy?
Well, you know, I grew up 40 minutes outside of Detroit, so it was like the starting lineup of the 1991-92 Detroit Pistons because they won.
Okay, all right.
I mean, I'm really like, my sports knowledge ends at the 1984 Detroit Tigers, who won the World Series, so that was a big deal. And then the 1991 and 92 Pistons. Mm-hmm. And a couple weeks ago, someone asked me something like what I know, like was like, regale me with all your sports knowledge. And I was trying to remember the name of Barry Sanders, the Lions football.
Running back, yeah.
Running back. I was going to say quarterback. I was actually just going to say football guy. and I said Barry Bonds, who I also know is a sportsman, but yes. I don't know who he plays for. I know that I got the wrong person.
By their reaction.
I'm not sure what he's doing now.
Barry Bonds?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think anybody knows.
When I was a kid, I always assumed that people's names were like, their names were associated with like sort of what they would end up doing in their lives, which I guess was true, you know, in the 1500s or whatever. So I assume he's like a bail bondsman now.
He is, yes. That's right. I just Googled that he's Barry Bonds is a bail bondsman. That's fair.
Well, I want to see if I can guess who your favorite player was. Was it Isaiah Thomas?
You know, I gotta say, Isaiah Thomas was like such a golden. His public persona was that of like the charming mama's boy. In fact, there was a commercial on for Detroit Edison, the power company, in which he like gave a spiel about, you know, electrical safety, blah, blah, blah. And then his mom came on and said, "Oh, Isaiah," and gave him like a kiss on the cheek. So that's how I remembered him. And then I have a friend who has season tickets to see the Knicks. And I went to see the Knicks one time, and they were like, he was like, "Oh yeah, he's a terrible coach, and he's like a serial sexual harasser. He's just like the worst."
Yeah, he threw hands a lot too. He'd get in fights all the time.
I just remember him getting kissed by his mom.
I might have a question that's not about sports. Is that all right? Can we talk not about sports on this podcast?
I mean, I probably have a lot more to say, but sure. Yeah.
So I have many questions for you. One of them is there's the episode of your show that you did where you actually went to India to track down a person that you'd been talking to through a call center.
That's long distance.
Yeah. Is that's what it's called?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. It's a fantastic, I think it's four parts now, because you did like a three-part series of it and then revisited.
It was two parts originally, and then we did an update.
Oh, you revisited. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's three. And it's all fascinating. I don't want to spoil anything. I want everyone to listen to it because it's so captivating. But there is a thing that struck me when I was listening to it. You went there with a coworker of yours who mentioned that you fall down a lot in holes. And that, I'm bringing this up because I fall down all the time, and I bump into things, and I'm a very clumsy person. And I just want to know, I heard that, and I was like, oh yes, good, someone else who falls down. I didn't know if that was being played up for the episode, or because like there's a clip of you falling down and be like, oh no, I'm falling. And I was like, yes, I've said that, and I felt that.
So when I was a kid, when I was an adult, and like I'd become like, you know, basically a functional enough person to sort of like, you know, do my own laundry and stuff like that. My grandmother once said to me, she was like, you know, you remind me of that character from Peanuts who has all the dust around him all the time.
Oh, shit.
Pigpen.
Yeah, Pigpen is the character's name. I'm glad that she didn't say you remind me of Pigpen, because that might have been a little too intense for me. But I feel like I'm like the kind of person who's like always like rushing out of one doorway into another room, and like I've got toilet paper stuck to my leg, and I'm like falling over. Like, yes, I'm super fucking clumsy. I don't pay attention to where I'm going. I am constantly falling.
Yeah. I think that's good. I mean, I don't think it's good. I just I think it's nice to talk to someone who also is clumsy. There was a time when Soren and I met up for an award ceremony, and the second he saw me, he saw that I was like covered in scratches and scrapes on my right arm, and he was like, "Were you drunk last night?" I was like, "No, I just was walking my dog, and I walked into a wall." It's the kind of risk that happens.
How did you walk into a wall?
I didn't see it.
Okay.
Well, there you go.
I mean, I say that, but I was like playing soccer one time, and I ran right into the like a football, one of those football goalposts.
Yeah.
The pretty big hard ones.
Back to sports.
Yeah.
Well, so I listened to that episode last night to try and find that moment again. And it's you're with Damiano Marchetti, right? And that,
mm-hmm.
And he sounds like this whole, like you almost just died. And when you, he says, whoa, 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 whoa. And then you go, oh, I almost just fell in a hole. Like it's like you falling 20 feet to your death is like around every corner for you.
The thing you have to understand is like there could not be a person more diametrically opposed to my clumsiness and general dishevelment than Damiano Marchetti. He's like the kind of person who has sommelier apps on his phone. He's like goes to the climbing gym. Like he's just like a person who's I feel like if they were to make like a modern version of Twins, we could be the characters.
Well, I'll say
I would be the DeVito, of course.
People often ask, are you an Alex or a PJ? I think that I'm a Damiano Marchetti. Is that an answer I'm allowed to do?
Damiano Marchetti, yes.
Okay. The minute you started saying he's rock climbs and everything, I was like, oh, tell me more about it. Does he want to go rock climbing with me?
I bet he would. I mean, he talks about it so much, and he's just like, he's like a fashionable boy.
Yes.
Yeah.
My people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, it's I think this is a kindred spirit for you, Dan.
Yeah, and I also have questions about that aren't about how handsome Soren and Damian McKay are.
Well, not so interested in those.
Do we have time for those? Can I get into
I have a whole list of questions, honestly, Dan, here, and I'm not seeing anything like that.
All right,
go ahead.
All right, so this is more serious than Falling in Holes. I listen to your show so much. I love it more than any podcast that exists in the world right now.
Thank you so much.
I don't have a journalist background where I'm just like tracing the truth of things. And like I do jokes. I'm a dummy who does jokes all the time. And I listen to your show, and sometimes there'll be an episode that like very clearly takes well over a year to actually reach any kind of sense of completion. And this is like such a stupid person's question. How do you do that? How do you start making phone calls with a stranger in India and then continue for several months knowing that it might not end up anywhere?
So in that particular instance, a lot of times what we do is when a story begins or when we have a question that we want to answer and we're making phone calls on it and we're trying to figure out the answer, we try to imagine the best possible version in our heads. We try to imagine the best version that could possibly come out of it based on sort of the questions we have and what we want to find out. And for 3 or 4 months on that particular story, the best possible version was I got in touch with a guy who was like, yeah, I really like Counter-Strike. And we thought that the end would be like us getting together on Steam and playing Counter-Strike. I thought like that was the best possible answer. And then this guy says, hey, listen, on one of my many phone calls, this guy says, hey, listen, if you ever want to come to India, you know, I'll take you to the Taj. We can hang out and blah, 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 blah. And I mean, he most definitely was not expecting me to actually show up. But once he said that, the best possible version of the story became something entirely different. And so I was just like, oh, well, this is something we absolutely have to do.
Do you have that latitude on every story where this is inside baseball stuff, but like, where are the resources? Where do those go? Are you allowed on every story, every thread that you tug, are you allowed for the possibility that you might have to take a flight to another continent?
Well, I will say this. No.
Okay, next question.
I think that if a story necessitates a flight, we can take a flight. We've been very lucky in that our show has sort of, it's been pretty much in the black since we started, because we got to sort of skate on the goodwill of our boss, Alex Bloomberg, who worked at This American Life for 20 years before he started the company, of which we were sort of like the flagship show. Like, we were very lucky to have this, to have like a built-in audience, yeah, because our boss, who had like incredible cachet as like a award-winning journalist and who, you know, did the sort of giant pool of money, This American Life episode, which won a Peabody or something, and also, you know, founded Planet Money. Like, he then started a company and was like, oh, listen to these clowns. So, right, like, we lucked out in that we could afford, like, the company would be willing to spend money for us to go places.
Yeah.
But my editors, Tim Howard, our executive producer, and PJ, who is the managing editor of the show, and Shruti, who also edits, if I want to go somewhere, I need to justify it. And not justify it financially, but I have to justify it in a story sense. And that is way harder than justifying it financially.
Certainly. It's I imagine that, like, you as someone who is on the inside of this, it feels like struggles to justify every story, especially the bigger ones. From an outsider perspective, it feels like you guys can do anything in the world. Which I know is not fair.
I will tell you that I've spent the past 3 weeks like banging my head against the wall trying to find stories. I'm really in like a fallow period. Mm-hmm. I'm having a very hard time. It's really stressful. And especially since, you know, 2 weeks ago, PJ, my co-host, just put out like this insanely good episode.
The QAnon episode?
QAnon episode. You know, he put out this episode where he basically pulled all of these strings together, sort of stuff that's been out in the ether, but put it together in this very presentable way, which presents a very compelling hypothesis to the identity behind QAnon, right? And so he did that episode. I sat in on one edit in it. I wasn't actually in the episode, really. And I got to like sit in on this thing that I was like, oh my God, this is so good. And then once I was done with the edit and giving my notes, I'm just staring at a computer screen, begging, begging the heavens, the cosmos, to send me a story that's worthwhile.
Alex, there's occasionally in the early morning, someone will drive down my street and he takes pictures of my house. Is that anything?
I mean, for you, it's certainly something. What kind of car is it?
Like a Ford Taurus, very nondescript car. But
and only of your house or all the houses?
Of my house. I'm mostly just joking here when I'm saying, is this a thing? But I mean, it is something where I was like, that's a weird thing. And I looked it up and other people have had this complaint. And I guess sometimes it's like insurance companies, banks will do it if they have a mortgage on the house because they want to make sure that the property isn't falling into dilapidation. I think there's a lot of really bad answers for why somebody would be doing it. Answers.
I do feel like
that's the thing that happens a lot is we'll have like a very tantalizing question. And then the answer is what my editor/executive producer, Tim Howard, calls a wet fart. He'll say, it's too bad the ending of that's just a big wet fart. Yeah. And then we just sort of kill it and move on.
I do think that illustrates a difference in the way that Alex, your brain works and mine works, is that Soren will say someone's taking my pictures and you're immediately like, what kind of car? Is it just your house? Like you're doing like journalism stuff. You're asking like details that are gonna like you're assembling puzzle pieces that you hope to put together. And if Soren had just asked me, hey, someone's taking a picture of my house every morning, I'd be like, fuck that guy. Don't let him.
Don't let him is so funny. The idea of don't let him. It reminds me of Dan Aykroyd shouting Getter at the beginning of Ghostbusters.
I have another question for you, Alex. And this is an episode from a long time ago, but it's called Today's the Day, where mm-hmm. you and PJ go off and you explore New York. And you get into some areas that feel very not city-like at all, where you guys are definitely alone, where you're breaking into some weird abandoned areas. And I'm curious if it's important to you in your New Jersey or wherever you are to have areas like that are just yours.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, you guys saw my attic. I have this sort of weird attic that has this spray insulation foam on the ceilings that makes it sort of look like a cave. It's where I have recorded since March, since, you know, the pandemic began in earnest in the United States. And, like, I make music up here. I spend all day up here. It's a huge fucking mess. And it is, like, definitely uniquely my own space. But, yeah, I mean, places that other people... that people tell me I'm not supposed to be, I think, are sort of uniquely attractive to me. I did an episode of a podcast called 99% Invisible. It was sort of the first long-form journalistic story I did. When I was in junior high and high school, there was this field outside of Ann Arbor, Michigan, where there was this gigantic, weird structure. And all around the property, there were signs that sort of said, like, turn back, no matter what you do, do not come here. The police, the property is watched and you will be arrested and blah, 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 blah. And for years, I was like, why is this thing out here? And so I finally, answered that question, you know, in my early 30s by like sending random letters to people's houses in the area, asking them who owns this thing and who, and it turns out it's like an eccentric millionaire, who got drunk with an architect, with a, like an architect slash, artist friend of his one day. And they were like, what if we made a thing out in that field? And they actually made the thing out in the field. And I was like, and I said to him, hey, and it's massive. It's the size of a small house, I would say. And I said to him in the story, I was like, so, you know, all those signs that say don't come in, I'm wondering if those signs were there to dare us to come in. Like, were they there to weed out the weaklings and to get like the good, the sort of brave ones to come in? He was like, no, I fucking hated you guys. You're always on my property. I wanted nothing to do with you. But those spaces to me are like just, it just feels like, it feels like, I don't know. I imagine it feels like Indiana Jones at the beginning of Indiana Jones, you know, like, like claiming a relic.
You sent incredibly
exhilarating.
You sent letters to strangers to find out
I mean, there was a farmhouse where we always topped the fence, and I just assumed that it was owned by the farmhouse. So I just started sending letters to people.
Who taught you that? Who said you can do that?
No one is the right answer.
If that's an acceptable answer.
I mean, I was living in New York, and otherwise I just would have knocked on their door.
So Alex, I grew up in Colorado where there's a lot of mines. The town I grew up in is called Carbondale, which is, gives you a sense of like, what the money was built around there. Right. And, there are all these mines that are abandoned around the town and around the Aspen Valley that you're not supposed to go near. There's signs everywhere. As kids, there's all kinds of warning videos you watch and everything because they don't want kids in mines. And that just made me want to go into mines so badly. And so like friends and I, we would try and find these mines that we could get inside of. And like you'd go in, there's always an entry point in a mine where, first of all, they always put padlocks on them. If you can break a padlock off, you can get inside just the very first part of it. And then we'd always get very scared because it just drops off after that. And I was so like curious about going down all those levels. Now, as an adult, my wife, her dad collects minerals, and he owns a mine, an old copper mine that all
and
he does.
Have you been in?
Yes. So,
is it as awesome as it sounds?
Oh my, Alex! It's the coolest thing I've ever done. you have to wear hard hat because you know there's, it's very small in some areas where you're just like hitting your head on rock, and then, you basically walk in. It says no admittance. It says stay away, stay away. It's all those signs. And then you just walk right through and then you climb down a rickety ladder, 6 stories down into the ground. And at each stage, you can go off on these different levels where they've dynamited or they've created these different tunnels. And at the bottom, there's a old mining cart and there's a track and you can actually push it on the track. And
so cool.
There are areas that they've never actually explored. So you might at any point be in a place that hasn't been, no one's seen since like 1890.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
It's really, really incredible.
When I was in high school, we used to, every building in that was part of sort of like the Central University of Michigan campus is heated by these, by like, I don't exactly know the mechanism because I'm not a physical plant guy, but there are these steam tunnels that connect all the buildings. So we used to, we found a loading dock, in one of the buildings that you could run down a flight of stairs and run into the steam tunnels. We used to run around under there. There were rumors that someone died in the 80s in the steam tunnels playing Dungeons and Dragons.
That's such a bad rumor.
Yeah, I know. But there were also rumors that the steam tunnels were like self-cleaning, like an oven. And if you were down there, they would spray like hot liquid fire on you and just melt you to death.
Yeah.
Which in retrospect is ridiculous. At the time I was like, oh my God, what if that happened to us? But you could like run around in there and get totally lost and then just end up on the other side of campus in a building, in some building's basement. It was so fucking
cool.
So
Occidental College in Los Angeles has tunnels, and it was like rumored to have tunnels throughout the entire school. And for 4 years, we spent trying to find those tunnels that ran through the entire campus. And we finally did find them. We had to get in through like the chemistry building, and you can get down there and people have written all over the walls and everything, other people from like 1976 have written stuff down there, and you can get to the bottom of the library. You can get into any closed building. It's the coolest thing.
One time, my brother Tommy and I
go ahead. I like walking around in the dark.
One time, my brother Tommy and I walked into a sewer and got sick. Is that anything? am I part of the conversation?
Wait a minute.
Okay.
I have a lot of questions.
Great.
Would you drink the water? Why'd you get sick?
No, we walked. We lived near some woods, and there was an opening to a sewer in the woods, and we walked into it, and then started to get headaches because we couldn't breathe, I guess.
Point of order. Were the woods behind a Sears?
No, this was not that. The woods were behind an elementary school.
Oh, okay.
Well, you're also really cool. I just really brave of you. And getting a headache and leaving quickly—that's also really neat. I just want you to know you're part of our adventurer club.
Thanks once more to Postmates for sponsoring this show. If you're like me, you probably start thinking about what to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. I love food. That's why I love, love, love using Postmates. I don't need to prepare anything. I could just put it into my phone and say it's a burger night, and then I get burgers from Postmates. But I actually love them. I've been using them for a while, but I love them more right now because I can get food delivered without leaving the house. I don't even have to open the door, you guys. Given what's going on in the world, they created non-contact deliveries. So now, when I order from local restaurants, as I always do, everything gets left right outside my door. They also have Postmates Pickup, which I've been using to order takeout from my favorite local restaurants. Listen up. Listen to me. This is the only part of the podcast I want you to listen to. You guys need to be supporting your neighborhood spots right now. I've only been ordering local because it's a great way to support my community. And Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi. They actually make my life easier by picking up everything I need from Walgreens and 7-Eleven and dropping it off once again right outside my door, and I don't have to talk to anyone. Just download Postmates on iOS or Android, find your favorites, and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code QQ. That's code QQ for $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it.
Alex, you said in an interview a long time ago that you would love to have a show that's just called Controversial Opinions with Alex Goldman, where mm-hmm. you just get to shout about things in pop culture that you hate or things that nobody else likes that you love. And I wanted to know what's stuck in your craw right now. What's your current controversial opinion?
I know this doesn't sound like a current controversial opinion, but it is something I was thinking about today. I fucking hate The Replacements.
Okay.
The movie?
No, the band.
Oh, okay. So not the Keanu Reeves vehicle?
I mean, I'm not a huge fan of that movie. But, you know, everybody I feel like it was one of those things that I was supposed to love. And, like, I got the albums, and I listened to them over and over again. Everybody told me, like, oh, you're going to love this band. They're, like, everything that you like. And they suck. The Replacements suck. I'm sorry,
that's fine.
Not a great answer, but that's true. I really fucking hate The Replacements.
I have another question for you, if you're... Okay. Soren has one.
No, go ahead.
No, so I find a kindred spirit in you because you have a lot of nerdy pursuits, and I really appreciate that. And I feel like your co-host, this is gonna feel like so much projection, I feel like your co-host sometimes tries to give you a lot of shit for your nerdy pursuits, and you don't balk at it. Like when he asks you something that he thinks is going to make you do an unforced error where you embarrass yourself, you meet the challenge with gusto and aplomb. And I don't want to be insulting. You have a lot of nerdy pursuits, but you are a confident person.
Oh, no, no, I'm not.
You seem like a confident person.
Sure, I can project confidence.
That's what I want to know. I want to know when you learned that, how that happened. Because, like, when PJ is like, here's some rope, I'm going to give it to you so you can hang yourself, and you meet that challenge with confidence, I was like, man, what class did he take to do that? Because I also have a co-host that, like, between you and me. He's a piece of shit.
Oh, yeah. You have a cool guy. You have a cool guy.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So here's the thing that I have to tell you is that...
Don't help him.
is that it plays totally differently. Like, if we're in a story meeting or something and he does that, to my coworkers, when I try and meet it, they're just like, ugh, this is embarrassing. You're like... watching their faces fall, like that to me, it's like being murdered. It's so painful, and I try the same tactic of just rolling with whatever he's trying to, like, what he tries to do is use my personality as like a weapon against me. And on the show, it comes off as just like him being a mean-spirited dick.
Yeah,
Soren.
Yeah. Go on.
But with my friends, it just comes off as him being like, as him like recognizing all of the horrible, fragile things about me.
So you don't feel like a confident person in real life?
Oh no, no. Every once in a while, I'll make a joke in a morning meeting or something, because every morning we get together and talk about what we're working on, and you know, especially now that we're all not in a room together, if I make a joke, PJ will just say like, great response to that one, when no one laughs. Ooh,
God. Devastating.
It's just like someone taking a knife and twisting it right in my stomach.
Now you have a lot of tweets where it's like you're reliant on a pun for the tweet to work, and it's kind of like a long walk to get there, and of course you're going to catch some flack for that, because there are people who are furious by the fact that they had to sit through it. But you have such confidence when you do it. It's like, you know, this joke's gonna bomb, but like, that's the pleasure about it.
So there's a sort of recurring character on our show, this guy Matt Farley, who we did a story about many years ago. PJ did a story about. Basically, his deal is he has written something like 40,000 plus songs. And he has them all on Spotify, et cetera, et cetera. And he does songs that are like, he has a song with like every city in America's name. He has a happy birthday song for every possible name. He does lots of songs about pee and poop, because apparently kids love to search pee and poop. He has a song called The Poop Song, which has over a million plays on Spotify.
Jesus.
But a thing that I learned from him is... rather than is like what he does is he like never stops to look back at the thing that he's just made. He will just keep making and keep making, and like, he, if someone says like, you're a scam artist and the only reason you make all this music is so that you will get money, not because you like actually care about music, his response is never like, that's not true, fuck you. His response is, I'm sorry you feel that way, here's an 8-hour playlist of some of my favorite songs that might change your mind. Like, relentless positivity has gotten him very far in his life. He makes like $60,000 a year from the 40,000 songs he has on Spotify.
Jesus, wow.
So, you know, he's doing all right. I figure, you know, what's my latest tweet? My latest tweet was, I'm too tired to be a Blade Runner, I'll be a Blade Walker.
Solid tweet. Goodness gracious.
It's good stuff, man.
So, I mean, you know, you know, it's out there in the world now. I can't do anything about that.
But that's what I think the pleasure of it is that, like, this thing now exists and people are, like, forced to reckon with it. And that's where the funny is.
Well, you know, there is another tweet that I just did, which is, you're familiar with the lawyer David Boies, who famously helped litigate the Gore-Bush election and more infamously... did a lot of work to protect Harvey Weinstein.
No, but I'm sure this is going to be worth it.
Yeah, let's pretend I'm familiar.
So his name is David Boies, B-O-I-E-S. And for years, I have been thinking about a tweet that is just David Girls, G-I-R-L-E-S. And today I just decided to tweet it. And then I followed it up with a tweet that said, I've been thinking about this tweet for like 3 years. And a guy responded to me, whose name is David Bodson. And it said, mocking people's names is hopeless because there's no way you'll come up with anything that isn't done better than by the bully in third grade. To which I responded, his name is Steven Bodson. His name is Steven Bodson.
Yeah, drag him to and fucking he said, hell, Alex.
he said, mocking people's names is hopeless. There's no way you'll come up with anything better that wasn't done better by the bully in third grade. To which I responded, Steven Butch.
It's napalm. You got him, man.
Yeah, I know.
As someone who's been a fan of you on your podcast for so long, like with the way you can shape a story and the way you know how to ask questions, I'm so annoyed that you're this funny. I think it's really unfair. You should only be good at a couple of things. I'm not good at anything.
Clarinet.
Clarinet, yes.
You're good at clarinet?
No.
Played it growing up. Yeah.
But doesn't that mean like you're kind of good at all the reed instruments? Aren't they all, don't they all have sort of like a similar vibe to
them? They have a similar vibe. I did saxophone for a little while, but I wasn't as good at clarinet. There's a learning curve thing.
Sorry, you're drifting off a little bit. What did you say, Dan?
I feel like this is where you have to dive in and be confident. This is the moment on the Reply All episode where I'd be like, oh yeah, well listen, I've been working on trying to do songs that are only in the minor thirds of all okay. of the keys and blah, yeah. blah, 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 blah. Like you just have to fucking, you have to be like, you know what? I know my reed instruments and I'm going to talk about them with verve.
Guess what, Soren? I'm good at oboe, which has, check your math, 2 reeds. Suck my dick.
Ouch.
Is that cool? Am I cool now?
suck my dick was hard.
Another tip I give you is don't ask, am I cool now?
Alex, I have one more question for you. You and I became sort of mutuals on Twitter after I think you had watched a couple episodes of After Hours, which is a mm-hmm. show that Dan and I used to do. And I'm leading to something here, and I'm hoping it's not the right answer. How did you discover After Hours?
This is going to be hurtful. No matter where it goes, it's going to be hurtful.
I don't think it. I think it's actually not going to be hurtful.
Let's see.
I read John Dies at the End.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And found my way to Cracked through that. And then After Hours was like was sort of a flagship property mm-hmm. on Cracked, and it was good.
Oh.
Also, I feel like the YouTube algorithm sent me toward like nerds talking about shit. So I might have found it that way too.
You came in a different door than I expected, and that's very nice. That's great to hear.
What did you expect?
Well, so we did an episode. I can't remember what the focus of it was, but at one point I talk about the guy from Man of the People in it. And it was your research that we didn't credit Reply All or anything.
Hell
we just
no.
glossed over this guy who would sew testicles into people. And then afterwards I remember thinking, like even when it was airing, I was thinking, oh, we should have put something in there. Like they did all this research. You guys came with this. It's for anyone who doesn't know, this episode is really wonderful about a guy who just like bluffs his way to the top and has all these connections to Trump. Like he's just the exact same type of person. And like how somebody like that arrives where they are and continues to fail upward no matter what. And it was such a great cohesive story. And we just took a detail from it. And didn't credit you.
Yeah.
And I thought maybe somebody might have seen that and sent it to you, and then you found After Hours that way.
No, that's not... That isn't how we found it, but now I'm really pissed at you.
Yeah, I figured. You should. That's why I wait till the end to ask this of you.
You should be pissed at me, too, because like every once in a while I'll have a morning meeting at work at Last Week Tonight and be like, you know, I heard this interesting story about XYZ. And then my boss will be like, no, yeah, I listened to that episode of Reply All, too.
I mean, to be perfectly fair, before that episode came out, I had read the book Charlatan by Pope Brock, which is about John Brinkley.
Okay.
So like, you know, it's not like It's not like we were the first people to ever tell a story about him. There's a documentary about him called Nuts.
Yeah, but I just didn't want that to be the access point.
Yeah.
I didn't want that to be the one where you're
Yeah,
these fuckers stole our shit?
It wasn't that. I don't even know if I should say this.
You probably should.
Someone sent me a QAnon article on NBC the other day, or on like NBC's website. And it just reads like a synopsis of the story we put out a week and a half ago.
Really?
Oh. Yeah. I mean, it happens. You know, I'm like the last person to get mad at someone for doing that, because the sort of way that journalism works, and it's a job that I've had in the past, is that you have to write 6 articles a day and you have to have them run against, you know, fucking ads for, you know, you won't believe this one weird trick that'll make your skin look 10 years younger. So, I mean, I totally get it. Like, I feel like I had a very low point one time in which I wrote a mean article about an this was when I was writing for an online publication. Mm-hmm. I wrote a mean article about a person who wrote a mean article about Macaulay Culkin's Velvet Underground pizza cover band.
Okay.
So
this is getting kind of close to home. So be real cool.
They did a performance in Boston. A reviewer gave it a negative review. Mm-hmm. And I wrote an article that was like, isn't that so mean of her? And then afterward, I was just like, I was like, I want to take a shower. This sucks. But I also have to write 4 more of these today. So I would never begrudge anybody for summarizing my work and not crediting me. I'd just be like, well, that sucks. So that sucks, guys.
That's almost worse.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Yeah, that's what I was hurt. That's dagger to the heart. My son has started taking to, like, as a joke, when he wants to pretend to be mad at somebody, he goes, I'm so disappointed in you. And it's clear that at some point one of us said that to him and it just shook him.
Yeah.
Like, it was such a bummer to hear.
Right. Someone and now said, you or your wife said disappointed. And he was like, oh man, that's way worse than mad.
Yeah, so now he's just like trying it on to see, like, well, can I use this weapon? Let's see what it's like.
I mean, I'm sure that my son gets all of the things that he says to me from me, but it's a really bad reflection of my parenting that the thing that he says to me when he's upset with me is, "You're annoying me right now."
that's brutal to hear from your kid.
How old is your son, by the way?
He's 5.
That's very fun. Devotees of the show will know that I'm baby crazy. I don't have kids of my own, but I think about them all the time in a not weird way, and I'm very excited about
he has journey. A daughter as well, Daniel.
Yeah, how old's your daughter?
She's 2.5. She's
God, what's her name? Can you say it on air?
Yes, I can. Her name's Polly.
Polly, oh my goodness.
Dan wants to come babysit right now.
She is incredibly fucking cute. She also has like the craziest voice I've ever heard on a creature. Oh, I know the video I'm gonna play. It's a video of her. So the setup for this is, let me just find it. The setup for this is she had like hair bands to tie her hair back, and she like poured them all over the floor. And this is me asking her what happened.
So what happened, B?
Don't know. There's a mess on the back.
There's a mess?
Yeah, there's a mess on the back. There's a mess on the floor.
And you don't know what happened?
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
Okay. Are you going to help me clean it up?
Yeah.
All right.
What an amazing child. She's got such a wonderful cartoon child voice.
Yeah, really. It's ridiculous.
Oh, that's so cute. And she's not taking ownership over it. I love it. And she's like, oh, we're moving on from that? Perfect. Yeah, I'll help you. Do whatever you want if we're not getting in trouble for it.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.
It's a mess. I don't know what to tell you. It's a mess.
Listen, we've looked into it. It's a mess in the back. It's a mess in the front.
I'm here to help you if you want to clean it up, but, you know, it's not really my problem.
Alex, this has been a real treat. I only have one more question for you while I go.
Oh, shit. Is the show still going?
Yeah.
All right.
While I go look for all of our stuff to plug at the end here, there's just one other thing I want to ask you. So in one of your episodes, you guys famously do call-ins where you guys will be up for 48 hours? I can't remember.
48 hours.
48 hours, and you just let people call in. And you have such a wonderful fan base to start off with.
Soren almost guessed 28 hours. Famously, a normal amount of time. We're going to be up for 28 hours, everybody.
Your fan base is so... They seem so smart and egoless, and they're from all walks of life, and I'm so jealous of the people that love your show because they seem so wonderful. And somebody called in and was very cagey about the fact that he had discovered the miracle to hair growth. Anyone who had lost their hair, he knew how to make hair grow back. And he was very, very cagey about explaining this to people because he was worried it was going to change the world.
It had a lot of other benefits beyond just hair growth, too.
Yeah, it was a lot of stuff. It was like metabolism and cured depression. And
we want to know what it is.
Yeah, what is it?
Legally, I'm not allowed to tell you. I signed a contract with him that says that I'm not allowed to tell you.
Did he himself draw up the contract?
No, Spotify drew up the contract.
Oh, Spotify,
like there's a lot of legal loopholes there.
You stupid assholes. You could have given the world the secret to internal life, or if not that, like a funny end note to this podcast. You
well,
shitheads. God damn it.
Did you try it, Alex?
So one of the best things to do on the show, one of my favorite things to do on the show is like put myself through incredibly unpleasant circumstances in order to make funny radio. It's, for example, staying up for 48 hours to answer phone calls. And so initially I was going to, you know, try it, go on a regiment of this hair loss cure, and do it with our caller. But our caller, who I thought was like a really sweet guy, and I thought that the conversation was really funny and like a little maddening, but in a very funny way, easily the most controversial thing we've ever put on the show. People hated it. People thought that the guy was infuriating and were very angry about it. And we're angry that we didn't reveal what it was at the end of the show, because what we did was we said what it was, but we beeped it out.
Yeah.
And afterward, we were like, hey, so now that we've made you the subject of, you know, hundreds of thousands of people's ire, you want to go ahead and do it with us? And he was just like, fuck you guys. Like, I don't want anything to do with you.
Have you heard? So one of the things that you did at the end of the episode was you allowed people to email him to hear more from him. Have you heard from those people? Because I don't want to be rude. I know liars. I think this guy's a liar, but I want to know what the experience of the people who reached out to him was.
I don't think he's a liar. I think he's just wrong.
Okay.
The people who reached out to him said that he didn't get back to them. I think he was overwhelmed pretty quickly by people who emailed him. Also, what didn't make it on the show, you know, due to our sort of journalistic inclinations, was we contacted like a bunch of scientists about hair loss, and we were like, hey, do you think this will work? And they're like, no, absolutely not. It's not in a million years. So I think he honestly believes that it works. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I think that he's just incorrect.
Give me on a grossness scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is like, oh man, I have to drink human urine, and
wait, 1 is
absolutely
urine?
Absolutely.
And 10 is what?
10 is draining a fluid with your own mouth from a person who is whose heart is still beating.
Are you talking about blowjobs, Dan? That's such a weird way to talk about oral sex.
I definitely wouldn't put that at 10. Okay, human urine is 1.
And then non-consensually forcing a fluid from someone's body is 10.
Is this vampirism? Like,
yes. Because I'm trying to figure out like the grossness level of this.
Okay.
I think it's square in the middle.
Oh, that doesn't help me at all.
Here's what, Dan, I listening to this episode. I found him very annoying only because he was so, like, there are people who are not good at telling stories in the world. And when you have to listen to a story from them, it's interminable because they can never get to the point and it just drives you nuts. But he's doing it very intentionally because he's got something he doesn't want to share too much of. And then when they get to the point where they ask him, it's bleeped. And then you guys both in unison say, of what? Not from what. Of what? And it was so, that's such a baffling phrase to me, because if it's from an animal, you're going to say from what? If it's any sort of like a heart, a liver, it is feces, like you're going to say from what? But you guys said of what? And that's so, it drove me nuts.
It's milk of magnesia.
What is that?
He said, it's milk. And we said, of what? Of magnesia.
Alex, is there anything that you want to plug?
No, just reply all. You can find our show at replyallshow.com and also replyall.diamonds, replyall.limo, replyall.pizza, replyall.ninja. I think we have replyall.fail. We have a lot of different emails.
We have our favorite episodes that we're definitely going to plug in the footnotes of this episode. If you have any others you want to throw in, that's fine. If not,
I think that the most recent episode is very emblematic of sort of the which is called. This is embarrassing.
But it was so weird because you were not involved in that episode. We didn't hear you in that episode.
The most recent episode is called Country of Liars. It's episode 166. So the thing is that every decision is made in sort of service of the story. If a story, a lot of the sort of interaction between PJ and I on the show, me and PJ on the show, is us goofing around. And one of us sort of serves as the audience surrogate where they will tell the story and I will ask the questions like, well, what about so-and-so and what about that? And it's not a put on. It's not like I know the story beforehand. When we go in the studio, I actually don't know what he's going to say, which I think is generally what brings us sort of the best sort of weird unscripted moments of the show. But in this particular story, we just felt like it was much better as a written story because, first of all, it was like so fact heavy and there were so many exact sort of pieces of information that needed to be sort of organized just so, you know. But usually it's us goofing around. I don't know. I whenever PJ puts out an amazing story that I'm not in, I just get really jealous because I'm like, you couldn't even cut me into that one a little bit. Just have me going like, what? Just, you know, reacting surprised.
Being the audience member, yeah.
For this podcast, I've recorded a bunch of like cold reads of me saying like, get out of town. Are you sure? And then I like insist that Soren puts them in no matter what.
You know, if you are doing, that sounds like a great idea. I used to work for a guy named Bob Garfield who hosts a show called On the Media. Both PJ and I were producers there. And we had a coworker named Jamie York, who I think works on More Perfect now, which is a Radiolab spinoff.
Yeah.
And he said that his only goal as a producer at On the Media was to get Bob Garfield to say, Bob's your uncle in an interview. And he never pulled it off. And to me, that's like a real, that's an insane failure.
Yeah.
It's a dereliction of duty.
You can follow Alex on Twitter at A Goldmund. That's AGOLDMUND. You can follow our show on Twitter at QQ_SorenAndDan. You can follow me at Soren_LTD.
Who cares?
Yeah, I mean, none of this really matters.
This took like a really sharp, really brief turn.
We ate this part.
A peek at how the sausage is made right now.
Yeah, Alex, the end of your show is so fun and so warm. You say, PJ says like a nice thing about Matt, right?
Yeah, Matt Lieber.
At the end of every episode, like a perfectly sweet thing to say. It's a very,
It's the only podcast that I want to listen to the end to because I'm excited about what they're going to say. This podcast, the one that I co-host, I don't give a shit. It's going to be garbage like what Soren is doing right now.
Listen, it's you guys picked the smarter route to insult each other and just sort of get out because we have no internal record of what we've said Matt Lieber is in the past.
Oh.
So there have been times when we've actually got the whole episode recorded. We're doing final listen through to make sure there are no mistakes. We're ready to upload it. And one of our producers will be like, "You've said that Matt Lieber before. You have to go record it."
I assumed there was like a running Google Doc that was like, "Here are things that Matt Lieber was, and here are things that he will be."
Our smarter co-hosts might have done that, but here we are.
Dan O'Brien is a breeze in your crawl space when you're just down there hanging out, feeling a little sweaty.
Fucking sucked. Awful. Terrible.
All right. All right. Well, bye.
Bye.